May the grace of God and His peace be upon us this morning as we continue in our thoughts about Him. I had to think as Ralph was praying for the Gingrich family this morning, we talked about sin having its effect on the whole body. If one person sins, one death has its effect on the whole body. David has been very, very much a part of every funeral at Tangent and now at Halsey over these numerous years that he's been there, probably about 26 or 27 years that they lived there. And he's been a very active part in the funerals there. This week, it'll be different. It's his funeral. We talked about that effect of sin having in our lives, in our churches. Ralph just read in verse 25 here in James 2, "But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deeds." We want that blessing. We want to be blessed. But to be blessed, we must look into the perfect law of liberty, which is the Word of God. And that is where we're at today. That's why we came to this service today. It wasn't to just relax from our labors. It wasn't to visit with our friends, though those things are part. But that isn't the purpose. And so as we meditate and as we try to assimilate the Word of God in our lives, as He teaches it to us, may we grow to be more like Him, to not be forgetful hearers, but doers of the work, so that we can be blessed. As far as we know, life is still before us. It could end before the day's over. We don't know. Message we're looking at this morning is titled, "Maintaining Spiritual Health in Our Vocations." This message was assigned to me in 1998 at a minister's meeting. So I preached this message to the ministry in 1998, but it is very much a part of our lives today. Turn to 3 John. We're going to read this letter. This message, or this title, as it were, comes out of verses 2 and 3 of this letter. 3 John, verse 1. "The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mightest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, that thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which are borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. Because that verse 7. because that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. I wrote unto the church Diotrephus, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, received us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Demetrius hath good report of all men, and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, that ye know that our record is true. I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee. But I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee, our friends salute thee, greet the friends by name. Here the Apostle John was desiring that Gaius's physical health would be as good as his spiritual health. Have you ever had someone write you a letter like that? I just wish that your physical health would be as good as your spiritual health. I have not. That's not something that we normally think of in that way. But I believe that Gaius was a man that loved God, and that was walking with him, and was listening to him, and was going about his work in a way that was God-pleasing. And God was blessing him for it. John also said he just loves to hear and see that his children are walking in the faith. And that is our desire as well, that we would walk in the faith. Right? Maintaining spiritual health in our vocations. We're not going to be looking at a lot of scriptures this morning. In fact, this is almost it. But we're going to be looking at aspects of our lives, and this probably they think, well, the women probably thinking, well, this is all on the men's side now. I can just take my nap. I can rest. But no, you have a vocation as well. And so what does our vocation do to our spiritual life? What are we talking about? Well, first of all, I think we ought to define some of these words. Now, this is pretty common in ministers' meetings, that when you're given a title, you have to, a topic, you have to define all the words that are in the title. But I believe it's important for us to know what we're talking about before we get into the real meat of the message this morning. To maintain is keeping something that is already there. We have something, and we need to maintain it. Now, for you girls, when you sweep the floor, what are you doing? You're maintaining a clean floor, right? It was clean when the carpenter built it. He probably, the last thing he did before he left the house was to sweep the floor. And so you need to maintain that. When you're washing the dishes, boys, what are you doing? You're maintaining a clean dish, right? It was clean, it got dirty, and so we need to maintain it. We want that clean dish to eat off from the next time. When you put the dishes in the cupboard for your mom, what are you doing? You're maintaining order in the kitchen. You go out to the shop, and your dad's been working on something, and there's tools all over. And so you say, well, I'm going to put all these tools back where they belong. You're maintaining an order. So the next time he needs that half-inch wrench, he knows where to go to get it. Because you've been alert, and you know where it belongs. Maintaining something that was already there. And so we're talking this morning about our spiritual life that we began, and we are working to maintain that. All right, maintaining something takes an effort. Sweeping the floor, washing the dishes, washing the clothes, putting the tools away, all of these things take an effort. And I have 3 points under this, and they all start with a C. It takes a conscious effort. I am going to do this. I am going to accomplish this. Take something that you put into your mind, and you make a conscious effort to do it. Right? It takes a consistent effort. It isn't something that we do on Sundays and forget about our spiritual life all through the week. But it's something that takes a consistent, everyday effort. And so we get up in the morning and we go and have our devotions. And then we forget about it all day. Is that consistent? No. No, that's not consistent. It needs to, our spiritual life, and we'll see this more, our spiritual life carries us through everything we do all day. All right, the third thing is that it takes a continuous effort. It's not something for the young people. I'm not talking to them only this morning. But it's something that all of us need to continue on in all of our life. Right, the next thing is, it is a personal responsibility to maintain our spiritual walk with God. Husbands, you can't do it for your wife. Wives, you can't do it for your husband. You can't do it for your young people, parents. The ministry cannot do it for the church. It is a personal responsibility for us to maintain our spiritual walk. It takes something to work with. We need to know and we need to have the tools of the trade. What's the tools of the trade? And we need to know how to use them. What good would it do a mechanic if he came to work on your car and he came out with this little tool and he plugs it in underneath the dash? And he's going to get the information off the computer and hope maybe that that'll tell him what's wrong with the car, but he doesn't know how to use it. He's got the tool, but he don't know how to use it. Now, if I had the tool, I wouldn't know how to use it, so I don't have one. What good would it do him to plug that thing in and sit there and look at all those numbers flash by him and the codes come up? If he didn't know what the codes were. How did he learn what the codes are? He studied the book. He studied the book. How do we learn what the codes are for our spiritual life? We study the book. Now, one of you young people, maybe one of the children, tell me where this verse is found. All right? Cleanliness is next to godliness. Somebody know where it's at? Sounds like Proverbs, doesn't it? You know what? There are a lot of people, a lot of adults, sitting in churches today that think that's a verse. There was a minister asked his church, to look it up and tell him the next Sunday where it was found. And there was people who raised their hand and gave him a reference. It's not there. It's not there. That's what I was told anyway, that happened. We need to study the book. We need to know what the book is teaching us in order to maintain our spiritual life. All right, Bible understanding, we have already talked about that, and knowledge of how to apply what we understand. We can understand it. We can study our lesson this morning. We can make that lesson back there in Achan's day, and we can talk about that. But you know what? In our class anyway, it came right up to today. And we talked about that as well. But if we just study that, we can learn the story, but we never learned a lesson. And so we need to learn how to understand the knowledge that we have. And how do we get that? From studying the book. And from help from others. Why do we have Sunday school class? Why do we have sermons? Why? So that we can help each other. There's an interaction. There's help there for us to learn how to maintain our spiritual life. All right? Spiritual health. Health. And physical health is a relevant thing. I expect, if you ask David Gingrich the other morning when he got up how he feels, he'd have probably said, good. We worked together for a couple of years, every day, almost every day. And so I kind of know some of his responses. Probably pretty good. He's got a lot of things he wants to get done. He's got a lot to accomplish, and he's out there doing it just like that. He was not a man to just sit around. Had to have his cup of coffee in the morning, get him going. But after that, it was move. You talk to the next person, oh, I'm just so tired. I just can't. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it through the day. And so physical health is something that's somewhat relevant. Some sicknesses, disease, or ailments may be present without even knowing about it. Is that possible? My wife had cancer for a number of years, probably before we even knew anything about it. On the 2nd of October, my brother has a doctor's appointment. He has a problem. He had a couple of problems. And the doctor said, we need to take care of this one, and then we'll start in on this one. He said, I fear that it's cancer. Now, he never had any idea that he had cancer. He may not have. It's possible that it's not. Some of these things we can have and we don't know about it, or we don't know what it is. We need others to probe around in our lives to see what our health is like. In the physical, a doctor. He'll stick needles in you. He'll pull out blood. He'll check all of these things. He'll probe around. He'll feel you. He'll punch on you. He does all kinds of things. Listen to your heart, to your lungs, through the stethoscope, all to find out what's going on underneath the skin that's causing some maybe little ailment or whatever. In our spiritual life, we need others to help us to find out where we are. Another reason for having church services, Sunday school, sermons, visitations. We rub shoulders with each other. And it helps us to find our perspective, our proper perspective, our right perspective on our spiritual life. Now, we can think and we can be healthy today and die tomorrow. We can be healthy and going about our work and boom, have a heart attack and it's all over. Remember my father coming, I believe he came home from a doctor's appointment years ago when I was a boy. He was kind of shook up, as I recall. I don't remember if this happened right in front of him or if it was just before he was in the doctor's office, but a man who was in the doctor had a complete physical, walked out the door, fell on the sidewalk, and was dead. Heart attack. That happens. Those things happen. How is our spiritual health? Our spiritual health, the relationship that we have between us and God, how is it? Are we healthy or do we just think we are? Are we walking with God? It is how we respond to the directions that God gives us. I want you to go there. I want you to talk to that person. Do we hear those calls? Your child is struggling with something. Your teenage son or daughter is going through some struggles. Do we see them? How is our spiritual walk? Are we concerned about them in those relationships? How about the relationship that we have between one another in the church? We see a brother or sister faltering and failing. What is our concern? What do we do about it? Well, it's their problem. I hear that too often. It's their problem. I think it too often. We heard in our Sunday school lesson this morning that in the church, one sin affects us all. Just like Achan's sin affected all of Israel. Our spiritual health is determined by our response to the spiritual beings we need to work with. To those who we're brothers and sisters with in the church. All right, let's go on to our vocation. What is our vocation? So anything we are physically involved in to make a livelihood. Anything we're physically involved in to make a livelihood. It is our job, our business, our homemaking, you name it. That is what we think about when we think of a vocation. In the world, a vocation is very, very, very important. When I was in high school, I remember the teacher telling us, by the time we get out of high school, we need to have decided what our vocation is going to be for our whole life. I disagreed with him then, and I still do. From my own personal experience, every job I've had, or nearly every job I've had, I decided one point before that I would not do it, including the one I have now. But our vocation is important. Discussion came up in one church when I was there one time. So what? Someone asked me, so what do you think about these truck drivers hauling malt barley? Now, you know what malt barley is? Anybody? Everybody? Men do. For those of your sake that don't, it's what they make beer out of. Malt barley is used for making beer. What should my response be? They're hauling malt barley from point A to point B. The end product of that is a can of beer to get somebody drunk and go out on the highway and kill somebody. I said, no, it should not be allowed in our churches. It is that which ought to be, our vocation is that which ought to be a help to someone else, not their hindrance. Right, our vocation. Anything we are physically involved in to make a living. Putting forth an effort for a gain. Selling what we have for a profit. And so you say, well, I'm just working for so-and-so. And so I don't have anything to sell. Oh, yes, you do. You have something that you are selling if you're working for someone. You're selling your time. You're selling your strength. You're selling your expertise. You're selling whatever you have that goes into that job. And so our vocation is something going out from us to someone else. Now, what is the connection between our spiritual life and our vocation? Turn to Matthew 6, 19 and 20 to 21. What is the connection between our spiritual life and our vocation? Many, many people keep those two things totally separate and require everybody that works for them to do the same. Verse 19, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now that is a big part of the message this morning. Where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. The place our vocation fills in our lives is in direct proportion to where our treasure is. The place that our vocation fills in our life is in direct proportion of where our treasure is. If our treasure is on earth, our vocation is going to be earthly. If our treasure is on riches, our vocation is going to be something that's going to make us rich, or try to. Under this, I have 15 points in about 15 minutes. If our treasure is in heaven, our vocation will be for a heavenly purpose. In other words, our emphasis is going to be to help people get to heaven. Some of you get out into the community and you work for people and you make some relationships, and sometimes I hear you talking about discussions that you've had and so on. Sometimes you may go into a place and you don't talk to anyone. You do the job, you leave, you haven't seen anyone. But 6 months later, I talk to that person, and this has taken place, and they tell me how they appreciated being able to leave their house open and let you come in with confidence that you're not going to be taking anything out of their house and messing anything up. Why? Because though they maybe never saw you, they respect you for what you stand for. Our vocation ought to be there to help people on their walk to eternity. Number two, if our vocation is our treasure, our desire for God and the things of God will wane. If our vocation is our treasure, the things of this earth, our life with God is going to falter. We will become unable to function, and we will die spiritually. If our emphasis is on making money, if our emphasis is on prestige, if our emphasis is on things of this earth, what's necessary to make our vocations healthy? Now, I messed up a little bit. I said I had 15 points under the last one. This is the one point that I have 15 points under. What is necessary to make our vocations healthy? We want to look at some of these things. This is not an exhaustive list, I'm sure. Number one, and I believe this is the number one thing, we need to recognize our dependence upon God. God has brought us to this point in life for a purpose. Recognize our dependence upon God. Number two, we need to ask Him to direct us, not when we just start out on a new job, but every day. That ought to be our prayer in the morning of every day, at noon of every day, at supper time of every day, before we go to bed of every day, continually through the day, we ought to be asking God to direct us through the remainder of the day. Don't worry about tomorrow or next week or next month. We're living today. We need His direction. Number three, find ways to share Him with others. We ought to be looking for ways to share God with others. Now, I have talked people on the phone, mentioned something about spiritual things, and the phone gets dead. You'd think that they hung up, but they're still there. They're not making any response. Don't get discouraged. They heard what you had to say. It will help them, maybe, someday. Number four, use the financial gain for the purpose of the kingdom of God. We do a job, we make $10,000. And so we believe in tithing, and so we put $1,000 in the offering. Have we done our job? We only need $5,000 to live on. What should we be doing with the next four, with the other four? I believe there's a lot of ways that we can use that money to help in the kingdom of God. Maybe it's helping ourselves. And the work that God has called us to. Number five, never have personal gain in mind. When you go into a project, don't have personal gain in mind. Leave that up to God. And under that, we have a desire that it is mine. You know, like a 2-year-old child, and there's two of them. It is mine. He can't have it. And the child tears off to mom. They're going to take that home with them. That's a 2-year-old, not a 32-year-old or a 52-year-old. That shouldn't be our attitude. That it is mine. I worked for it, and so I have it, and it is mine to use as I desire. That's not what God is calling us to. I can use it the way I want to. Oh, what a sad, lame excuse for wasting money. Number 3, selfish. Use of finances will never bring happiness. Selfish use of finances will never bring happiness. A man was telling me one time about his parents. They sold a house in Los Angeles, someplace down in California anyway. They moved up to Western Washington, and they built a mansion. Right down through the middle of that mansion, they put a solid wall. It was removable, but it was a solid wall. This half of it they lived in, that half was empty. And it would be empty until sometime they decided to sell the place, or the children did. That wall could be removed, and you have a 10,000 square foot house. Is that a waste of money? Yeah. That ought to not be the thinking of God's people. That's selfish. All right, number 6. Remember, God has given you the abilities you have. Yeah, but I went to college. I studied it all out. I learned it. I'm the one who got it. No. God gave it to you in the beginning. No, I kind of just inherited that desire. No, but God gave it to us. God gave us the abilities that we have to accomplish what we can accomplish for His glory. Number 7, we are stewards of our vocation. We often think of it, we're stewards of our money, or stewards of our possession, but we are stewards of our vocation. God is the holder of that vocation. He is the one who deserves that vocation. All the credit for it. We are here just to do the manual labor of it. God gives us a family. He has made us stewards of that family to teach those children how to live. He's given us a job, and we're working for some company. Maybe a big company. I worked for Carnation Company for 5 years. Never saw my boss. All I did was get a check from Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles every 2 weeks. That's all I knew about them. There was a name scribbled on the bottom of the check that the boss wrote one, whoever he was, CEO, wrote one time, and then it was just printed after that. But I am a steward of the job that they gave to me to do, even though I didn't know them. Right, number 8. Never allow your vocation to rule your life. Never allow your vocation to rule your life. Now, we make plans, we make schedules around our work. We don't have a job and plan something in the middle of the day that takes us away from the job. The vocation is not ruling our whole life. Number 9, be master over your vocation. This is just looking at number 8 from the other direction. We need to be the master of that vocation. Even though we are serving that in that vocation under God, and we are serving maybe under another person or organization, we still need to be the master of that vocation. Not the vocation running us, but us running the vocation. When the vocation starts running us, we're going to be wore out, and we're going to get burned out, and we're going to lose out. When we run a vocation, we have some choices. And we can keep things operating without the burnout. I think too often people allow their vocation to run them. Just read a story. It has been taking place in China since China opened up for private enterprise a number of years ago. At least there was bankers involved in it. The one banker was told about, worked all day and didn't have his job done. He was hoping to have it done before the sun came up the next morning. So he worked all day, all night, and he got his job done. He got a little rest, apparently, and went back and was doing it over and over and over and over, 7 days a week, working those long, long hours because he had to prosper. He had to keep this bank afloat. But died, and I believe it said 44 years old. And this was happening in numerous of these private enterprises. They were just pushing themselves and getting no rest. We can do that. We can do that. And ruin our health physically and spiritually. Okay. Number 10. Enjoy what God has given you to do. Enjoy it. Now, when I was 12, 13 years old, I went to the welding shop with my dad when he went in to get some welding supplies. And as I watched those men working in that shop, and it's smoky and dirty, and I decided I will never work in a welding shop. Well, it's been about 26 or 7 years now that I have. Do I enjoy it? Yes, I enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, it would become drudgery. If I wouldn't have enjoyed it, the customers would have soon realized it, and there wouldn't have been any customers. And so we ought to enjoy the things that God gives us to enjoy. One reason I enjoy it is that what I wanted to do was build furniture when I quit working at Smith Seed. But when we were asked a couple years later to move here, there was already 2 cabinet shops in Truila. And so there was not going to be any cabinets. And ask Jeff how easy it is to build furniture in Eastern Washington, or Washington probably, period. You just don't make it. It isn't there. And so I believe that God put me in a niche that was allowed to keep on working and making a living. Enjoy what God has given you to do. Number 11, do your best, but don't give it all. Don't give it your all. That is reserved for God. Do your best, but don't give it your all. Now, that may be kind of confusing. But what I'm thinking is that our all goes to God. Sometimes I see this in Bible school. Students will write to another person's annual something about making God first place in your life. That's not enough. God needs to be second, third, fourth, and fifth in all of our life. Not just first place, but all the places in between or after that as well. God is here. We need to give him our all, and our vocation is part of that. Now, the last four points are under the thought of don't allow it to be your God. Don't allow your vocation to be your God. Remember, your vocation may change. Don't plan at 18 years old that you're going to do the same thing all the rest of your life. Because we are in God's hand, and God can move us around and give us different things to do. And so we need to be ready to be able to do it. Now, I've had truck drivers tell me, the only thing I know is to drive truck. I don't know how to do anything else. I've had farmers say, I don't know how to do anything but farm. I'm just stuck. No. When we are God's children, he can teach us how to do other things. Now, I think farmers have the greatest advantage because there's so many different things that you get involved in. I mean, you're not just out there working the fields all day and every day. There's always repairs. There's always something else that goes on, and you learn a lot of different trades when you're a farmer, if you want to. Don't always expect your pay to increase. Oh. Don't always expect your pay to increase. When I quit working at Smith's, my sister came and she said, now you're going to give your wife as much money now that you're on your own as you did before. And I said, no. I mean, I was making good money. I was making $8 and a half an hour. And I didn't make as much after I was on my own. Not for a long time and maybe never. If I'd be there yet, I'd be making a lot more. Don't always expect your pay to increase. Number 14, don't determine that you are qualified for one kind of work. And I've already talked about that, so we can go over that. Don't take a job just for the pay. That was a piece of wisdom that my father gave me before I had my first job. He said, don't change jobs just for the pay. There needs to be other reasons to change a job. Now, I've had employers say that when they're talking about a job for the applicant, the first question they ask, the applicant for the job asks, is, what am I going to get paid? I said, usually that, what do you call it, resume, gets put on the bottom of the pile. That's not my desire, to hire somebody that is so concerned about pay that the first question he asks is, what am I going to get paid? It's better to not even know what you're going to get paid, to not ask it. Let them tell you what they're going to pay you. Our vocation is a big part of our job, of our life. We work on a job normally about a third of the day, probably more. 5 days a week. And so it's a big part of our job. It's a big part of our life. And we need to make a living. But let's be in a job that is helping others. And I used to hear this stress more than I do anymore. But our work ought to be there to help other people and to be a blessing in God's work. Shall we pray?